From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. And also welcome new affiliates, KRDO AM 1240 and KRDO FM 105.5 in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Great to have you part of the family. Next hour, Earth Changes Prophecies with Lori Toy, her new work, Points of Perception. Here's what's happening. Problems in Afghanistan, big problems. Afghan President Hamid Karzai appealing now for calm after officials said six people shot to death, dozens wounded in protests over the burning of copies of the Quran, Islam's holy book, at NATO's main base in the country, in Kabul. The U.S. Embassy said its staff in lockdown and travel had been suspended as thousands of people expressed fury over the burning and protests that flared for a second day now in several cities. It was a public relations disaster for the U.S.-led NATO forces fighting Taliban militants ahead of the withdrawal of foreign combat troops by the end of 2014. Craig Hewlett, of course, a regular guest here on Coast to Coast AM. He's a analyst and consultant. Craig, why don't we just pack up and leave?
Well, I don't think we'll ever pick up and leave. I think we're there for the reasons I outlined a decade ago. I don't think anybody can argue any further that we're not there for the pipeline, oil, and natural materials. So, no, we're not going to leave. In fact, there's been a couple of reports. I'm not sure how credible they are. They seem credible enough. They were news agency reports that the CIA has made it clear that they don't ever intend to leave Afghanistan or Iraq, for that matter.
I agree with you there. This is a disaster. They burned the Quran by mistake, but they did it anyway, and it has fueled hatred out there. What are we going to do about that?
Well, I think what ought to be done and what we will do, I think, is two completely different things. Most people in America aren't aware that a Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis released a classified report to the Pentagon, several members of the Congress and the Senate, the Armed Forces Committee. And the Pentagon has refused to release the document at all, but he managed to get 85 pages released. I have a copy of it in the PDF file, and I'll make it available to your audience free if anybody's interested. But what he points out in the classified document and what I've been able to glean from the one that he published unclassified, he basically says that everything we've been told over the past 5 years, starting with General Petraeus, who he is extremely critical of, he says basically we've been just totally lied to about every degree of success we've claimed, that none of it's been true, and he backs it up with considerable documentation.
Craig, while you're with us, I want to get your reaction to the situation in Iran. It seems to be boiling. The Iranians now saying, look, we may attack before you attack, just to protect our own interests. What do you think is going to happen there?
Well, I think the Iranians are reacting to the Israeli buildup on their border. The Israelis don't have ties any longer with Turkey, yet they've managed to force Turkey into some kind of a quid pro quo because they've deployed a large number of forces north of Iran. And, of course, what we're discussing right now, Afghanistan, is falling apart. We're losing the war in Afghanistan. That doesn't bode well for Iran either. So is it possible Iran would strike before Israel does? That's a possibility. I think they won't because they are actually too smart for that. But there's a lot of rumblings that Israel's going to strike before June or July this year and force the United States into a war with Iran.
If you control the military button here, what would you do about Iran?
Nothing. There's no real threat from Iran. Even if they were to pretend they were developing a nuclear weapon, which there's no evidence that they are.
But if they have it, are they a threat?
One, the bottom line is that the same doctrine that kept the Soviet Union in check would keep Iran in check. If Iran does anything with a nuclear weapon, even a dirty bomb in the hands of terrorists, the United States could just obliterate the entire nation of Iran, and Iran knows that just the same way the Soviet Union knows it. The other thing is we've built up an enormous deployed force of special forces, SEALs. Nothing of this nature has ever been attempted in world history. So anytime the United States really wants to, we can go in and take Iran out by using special forces and SEALs. We could also bomb them into the Stone Age, which we tend to choose to do rather than other options.
Never seems to work, though, does it?
No, in fact, it's, you know, I've discussed it in my works. I've discussed it over the years in lectures and in interviews. The people on the ground that have witnessed shock and awe have always come back to the United States and written and testified that it shocks and puts no one in awe. They simply put their heads down, wait till we're done.
And they come back.
They just come back and shoot back.
All right, Craig, always appreciate your candor. Craig's website, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Tesla Motors downplaying the claim that its engines and its all-electric vehicle lineup could be rendered useless if left unattended for a period of time without a charge. The response comes after a blogger wrote an entry describing a situation where several of the $100,000 Tesla Roadster engines were left uncharged. The result? An estimated $40,000 repair bill. The federal government is saying that fresh milk is 150 times more dangerous than pasteurized milk, a finding that bolsters the government's argument as it goes after farmers who sell unpasteurized milk across state lines. We've had several stories on this. However, fresh milk supporters say pasteurization, the process of heating food to kill off bacteria, removes some of the health benefits of milk, and they argue that when consumers know their suppliers, diseases from raw milk are not even an issue. How the time of day can increase the risk of dying from an irregular heartbeat has now been identified by researchers. The risk of sudden cardiac death peaks in the morning, rises again in the evening. A study published in the journal Nature suggests the levels of a protein which controls the heart's rhythm fluctuates during the day. Imagine this. You're driving on a bridge, and all of a sudden, you've gone over the bridge. The end of the road. A driver and her two passengers astonished rescuers when they survived after plunging 40 feet off an unfinished bridge. The workers had forgotten to seal off the traffic. This happened in China. Witnesses were amazed when the car crashed and all the passengers simply got out. Cincinnati man has been ordered to apologize to his estranged wife on Facebook after he wrote a post on her last year. There was apparently some order of protection against him, and he couldn't verbally or otherwise say anything, but he went on Facebook and did what he did, and the judge said, nope, that's not right. Tarot cards, can they predict your future? Up next, Art Rosengarten joins us. Tarot and psychology. This is an expert. He's a psychologist, but he's decided to look at tarot cards. Art's next on Coast to Coast AM. You know, for some time, we've talked about all these mystical things that happen on this planet. One of which is, how do people look at tarot cards and determine what your future is? Well, for years now, I've talked with an expert about that, Art Rosengarten. Art's a psychologist, number of years of practice in California, published writer and author. He is an expert on tarot cards, and here he is on Coast to Coast. Always a pleasure to bring you back, Art.
Nice to talk to you, George.
How have you been?
Great.
Super. Tarot cards.
Yes.
Are they scary?
Well, for some people.
What if you pull the death card out? What does that mean?
It means you're going to die.
Thanks.
But, you know, we're all going to die, George, and it doesn't necessarily tell you when you're going to die, but I think the tarot cards reveal the basic human issues that we all face. It isn't so much a predictor, but a vehicle to open the present moment, to look at big ideas, universal themes that we all can relate to, and I guess examine what's going on for us now, not ideas about what might happen to us in the future.
How did you get involved in this? I mean, you're a psychologist, clinical psychologist. You've done this for years. How did you start picking up tarot cards?
In graduate school, believe it or not, in San Francisco, it was a weekend seminar. I was studying things like dream analysis and Jungian psychology, And one of my professors offered a seminar on the weekend on symbols in the tarot. I found it fascinating and ended up writing my dissertation on the tarot and never looked back.
Never looked back at all. Let's talk about the tarot cards. How many cards are in a
78
deck?
78 cards divided into a major and a minor arcana. The minor arcana, George, is like playing cards. They stem from the tarot. And the major arcana is an additional 22 cards known as the trumps. These are the archetypes, like the fool and the death card and the magician, things like that.
How did they start? Where'd they come from?
We don't know the actual origins of tarot. It's a mystery, which is why it's so interesting and why there are many tarot scholars studying origins. It's a hot topic. We know the first decks came out of the Italian Renaissance in the 1400s, early 1400s. But where they came from, what their original source was, remains a mystery.
Now, with these cards, and specifically the way you work, you spread them out, right? You spread them all over the place, okay. And you pick what? How many?
Well, what you're referring to is a spread. There are many different size spreads, short spreads and long spreads. Now, you know, for a show like this, I would just focus on just three cards, and you assign them positions, and there's many different spreads, but there's a couple of spreads I like to use when I'm on your show. In a private reading and like an hour reading, we'd probably use maybe 10 or 11 cards in what's known as the Celtic cross spread, which is, I call it the bread and butter of tarot spreads.
Okay, and explain a little bit more how that works. So you pull the cards, what does that mean?
Well, first, what you do is you empty your mind and you try to experience what I call beginner's mind, which means you meditate or quiet your mind and get very present with no thought. And then you shuffle the cards until they're fully randomized. You want to make sure that this deck is completely shuffled. And then you randomly select a small set of cards, maybe three cards, that one for each position. You turn them over one at a time and contemplate the synchronicity of your question, the particular position, and then the symbol. Each tarot card is a very rich composition of an image, a number symbolism, a suit or associated with an element. And at that point, you use your intuition and your insight, and you begin to imagine what this is telling you. And that's how it works.
Well, are the tarot cards, do they tell you the future, what will be or what could be?
Well, see, it depends on the tarot reader and the tarot reader's belief system. I particularly am not a believer in predicting the future, because I believe the future is an idea. It's always coming out of the present.
And it's changeable, isn't it?
It is changeable. And really, how you relate to the present, that can be changed by changing your thinking, changing your relationship to what's going on. But the future is more of a concept, I think. So does it predict the future? It can, but what's more compelling is really looking more deeply into what's going on right at the present moment.
Now, you just talked about the reader of the tarot cards. So what if one person interprets differently from another, or do they?
Of course they do.
They do.
Of course they do. However, there's consistency and difference here. It's a combination. The tarot cards have meanings from their own side. You can't invent new meanings. There are established conventions and meanings and correlations and correspondences with each tarot card, even though there are probably 600 or 700 different decks. They're all the same tarot, just different images or artistic executions of the same set of 78 cards. So a reader brings his own personality and his own particular slant, but the cards are the cards.
Who trained you? Or did you train yourself?
No. My first teachers, Angelus Arian and Hillary Anderson, are two professors at the California Institute of Integral Studies in San Francisco, were my initial teachers, along with Mary Kay Greer, who's a wonderful contemporary teacher as well. And then mostly I trained myself by practicing while I was working on my dissertation, like on a daily basis, making my own experiments and kind of developing my own instinctive way of working with the cards.
Was it trial and error for you?
Well, no, I wouldn't say it's trial and error, because I basically practice what I call, have come to call, the prime directive of all tarot card reading. And that is simply, the card is always right. And it's an act of faith that you come to this experience with the sense that the card is correct. It's me that has to rearrange or contemplate to find where that is so. It's a different way of thinking. And that is really the window which opens the oracle experience.
Who picks the cards, you or the person who needs the reading?
I typically have the querent select. It doesn't ultimately make a difference at all. And when I do a phone reading or read on the radio, et cetera, I can just as easily select instinctively. I like the querent to select because it gives them a little bit more ownership of what they get. They can't walk out of a reading and say, oh, yeah, but you picked the cards. So, but ultimately, it's my belief that it really does not matter one iota.
In the beginning, were the tarot cards used almost like a game in those days, or was it always a serious tool?
I believe they were like a game. They stemmed from a game that's similar to bridge. They were collected for their beauty. A lot of the artisans in the Italian Renaissance were hired to create these beautiful decks for the nobility, and I don't believe they were really used for divination until several centuries later, more in the 18th and 19th century, were they really viewed as oracles or divination decks.
Art, years ago I did a television show called Predictions. You were on it. You pulled out a deck of tarot cards. You called it the Tarot of the Nine Paths. A little different from the other ones I've seen from other people.
Yes, well, that's a deck that I created myself, and it is different not only by images, because it's an elaborate process, but I made them out of a technique in psychology called sample therapy, and they were designed primarily to express a theory that I have of how the tarot deck is actually short, five cards, and that there is a way of demonstrating that, and I needed a deck to do that. So I created one because I believe that the major arcana should actually be 27 cards, not 22, and there were five cards missing. So I used the tarot to actually help me decipher the missing cards. That's a complex conversation, George, which I'm happy to have with you, but I'm not sure you want to get into all of that with me.
Art, and let me ask you, when events change on this planet, we're going through all kinds of things right now, and you've been with me since 1997.
Yeah.
We've talked about different things, and we've gone through a lot in all those years.
Yes,
do you find that in different periods of time, depending on events, the cards will differ?
Oh, my God, that's such a great question. And yes, I do. I think that there are patterns like that. And actually, the way I think of it is maybe not so much on a global level, but if I were to work at a, say, a large party or a public event and read maybe 50 to 100 people a night, which I've done on occasion.
And that's huge.
They're... are definitely certain patterns of cards that keep on coming up and other cards that never appear, and it's uncanny.
Let's talk more about that, Art, when we come back. Plus, we'll do something we haven't done in a long time. I'll have you pull tarot cards of our Coast to Coast listeners. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Lori Toy joins us. We're going to be talking about her thoughts of Earth changes, prophecies, and also her new work, so get ready for that. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Art Rosengarten, as we talk about tarot, his book, Tarot and Psychology. We'll take your calls as well. So, Art, as we were talking, do events alter the cards, or do the cards alter events?
I think things are constantly changing in both events and the cards equally are altered by the nature of reality. If that is not a total hedge to your question, George.
But you are political, Art.
Well, yeah, that's another story. You know, the thing about tarot card readings and the I Ching and other oracles from a modern contemporary perspective is they do three things that are critical. And this is how you can think about it, George. They translate a problem or a question into an image language like that of dreams. They put it into a dreamscape, if you will. Two, they mirror the unconscious forces shaping any given moment, problem, or situation. The other side, the hidden side, that's what oracles pull out. And three, they capitalize on a key psychological insight, and that is that in every symptom or conflict or problem, there's an inner spirit trying to communicate with us. And so a reading is designed to just tune into what that hidden inner side of it is, just to get some perspective on whatever we're talking about. It doesn't really matter.
No, it does. Now, you believe in synchronicity like I do, right?
Absolutely.
Where does synchronicity fit into all of this?
That's the answer to the question, how does this work? It's synchronicity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, synchronicity is, I think synchronicity from our perspective, it's opening a window to the way the universe actually always is. It's always interconnected and happening simultaneously, and we tend to view that through a linear causal perspective where we don't ordinarily see it that way. We see it as, you know, there's a past, present, future, kind of an arrow of time.
Yeah.
There's a movement, and so we conceptually think of time and events as unfolding in a linear direction. When, from the perspective of synchronicity, we actually open to the non-linear, to the non-causal side of existence or of events, which says that actually it's all happening right now, and this is it. This is the now is kind of eternal. There is no future or past. It's all now. And that's synchronicity is just our way of tapping into that way of looking.
Art, let me ask you this, and then we'll take some calls here on what's left of this incredibly fast hour. Just incredible. When you are doing the tarot cards, have you ever in your life seen anything that scared the living daylights out of you?
One thing, that's an interesting question. I once read it at an event, and a woman asked me about her adult daughter, and I got just some really troubling, disturbing cards in a strange combination with, you know, reversals and death and lots of very difficult things, and I was really having a hard time, stepping into the shoes of this person with a complex reading. And finally I said, you know, I'm having a real difficult time reading this person. And she told me that she'd been in a coma for 10 years.
Jeez.
And that she had some complicated chronic illness. And but she told me that after the fact. So it was kind of weird and creepy, because I had entered into this realm of her mind, I think, that just was very different, as we said.
All right, let's take some calls. Art Rosengarten with us. We're gonna attempt on radio. We've done this before very successfully, for him to do just a very brief reading with you with three cards. And let's go to it.
I'll just tell you, whatever you want to know, I'll tell you how it appears, what's really going on, and what needs to come out now. That's it.
That's fair enough. All right, let's start by going to Susan in Everett, Washington, first-time caller. Welcome to the show, Susan. How are you?
Well, thank you. I'm well.
Great.
Thank you.
All right, Art, how do we begin?
If you have any question or no question, Susan, you just need to ask it, and I will basically give you a three-card reading. So do you have a question?
I do. Why have I developed radial nerve palsy in both of my hands?
Okay.
Arms.
Okay. Okay. I'll take that. The way it appears, Queen of Wands reverse, what that means is that it seems like it's been about your inability to delegate and have other people help you in your life doing things. You tend to have a tough time asking for what you need. But what's really going on, and that's the second position, so I'll select that card. By the way, I have a fanned out face down deck in front of me, and I'm just randomly selecting these and then interpreting them. And that's the Four of Pentacles. What's really going on, it has to do with living within your means and actually getting, because this is the Four of Pentacles, and it has to do with structuring your material and financial lifestyle, and somehow that whole world is related to your symptoms in your hand. It has to do with getting your house in order, if you will. Mm-hmm. And where you need to pay attention now, or what needs to come out now, is the Eight of Pentacles, which means get to work. This is the worker card, the apprentice. It's learn a new skill and get very, very busy. Now, listen, Susan, that didn't answer your question directly.
Wow, that's so right on.
Does it make sense?
That's amazing.
That's how good. I'm glad you got it. See, that's how it works, where the question gets you into the reading, but the answer will tell you what you need to hear. Not necessarily a direct response, but kind of it will speak to the question. So that's how it goes, George. I'd be happy to try someone else.
Okay, yeah, we're going to do some more here, Art, as well. For people who want to do this on their own, are there any disclaimers there? I mean, like a Ouija board, I would tell people, hey, don't play around with this thing. What would you say about the tarot cards?
Not like the Ouija board where there's like but I think that it's not a parlor game. I always tell people, don't, if you want a reading, you have to be a little bit serious, because be careful what you ask for. It's never a funny, fun kind of casual thing. The tarot cards are so direct and so true that if you choose to try yourself to just experiment with the cards, which is fine, be in the right set of frame of mind where you're taking it as a real exercise, a real experiment that's could be very powerful.
Sure would. All right, next up we go to Josh, Denver, Colorado. Welcome to the program, Josh. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, George.
Sure thing.
Hey, it's a pleasure to speak to you and Art. Okay. I've been a long time listener.
Well, great. Good to have you. How about a question, and then we'll let Art do his thing.
Well, I was going to ask Art what he thought about destiny And if there is destiny, I don't know if he could tell me what mine is.
You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to let the tarot answer that question, if you don't mind, Josh, if that's okay. And what the tarot says, what the tarot tells us there is, it appears like destiny is a, and I'll tell you the name of the card and then I'll interpret it, is a Five of Pentacles, meaning destiny is a person who's out in the cold struggling with the hard luck, hard times. That's what destiny appears to be. But what's really going on with, quote, destiny is the Justice card reversed, which I would say inner justice, inner balance. Destiny, it's like karma in a way. Destiny is you get what you deserve in a way. It's a way of balancing out things. If your conscious attitude is one way, destiny, I think, is the its opposite, to help balance things out, is what I'm getting right now. Or you could also say inner truth. Justice reversed would be inner truth. Maybe that's what destiny is. And then the third card is what you need to know now, or maybe about destiny, let's put it that way. And here I got the death card, okay?
Uh-huh.
So the teaching around death and destiny is, no, first place, don't be afraid, because we all, you know, death is certain. The first teaching of Buddhism and most of the world religions is death is certain. However, the time of death is unknown. But this is kind of stepping into that basic existential truth that destiny and death, in a way, death says everybody has that same destiny. We're all on that path that the eventual outcome is death. So I think that's a perfect answer to the, you know, what you need to know about destiny is it ends in the death card, not necessarily physical death, but the death card, which means dissolution, transformation, finality, and death.
Okay, thank you, Josh. Good luck to you. Do the cards change? Can you ever go back and say, well, I didn't mean to take that one?
No, yeah, you never do. And you never should, because, yeah, like I said, the prime directive is the card is always right. And once you begin to hedge, you say, I didn't like that one. Let me try it. You can do a cover card. Some people like that. But you don't eliminate or cancel out what you got, because as soon as it's revealed, it makes an impression in your unconscious, and you'll really kind of mess yourself up if you start correcting. You trust it's there because there's something important to get there, and that's how it works.
And that's how it works indeed. Truck driving in Texas, Lance is with us. Hi, Lance, go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Hey, good to have you with
first
us.
First thing I wanted to say was Ron Paul of 2012, and I know what George, you're always talking about comparing the Ouija board, so that kind of, you answered my question on that. So I guess my question for the tarot is, I'm about to start helicopter flight training as a career, and I'm curious as to if that's the right path for me.
That's pretty dramatic. And let me ask you this, Lance, before Art does what he does. Do you have flight experience?
I've never lifted off and hovered a helicopter, but in the Army, I was given a chance to a little bit.
Okay, he's breaking up. So that's his question, Art.
Helicopter
see
training.
What you can do. Go ahead.
The idea is, it doesn't matter what you want to know, personal or big issue. This, I do the same thing, and I just interpret what I see. And so I'm gonna do it again. I'm just gonna, you know, kind of randomly select from this face down cards. First card, the way it appears.
And he's listening on his radio. So go ahead.
Good. Yeah, Miss Truck. Queen of Pentacles. It appears like this is a very good idea, because it's about the Queen of Pentacles is the Queen of Ordinary Magic. It appears like this would be a perfect kind of change, career change. It would just be elegant and right. It appears that way, but what's really going on, and that's the second card here, is the second queen. So he started the Queen of Pentacles. Now he has the Queen of Cups. And so that's interesting. Two queens. Wow, that's synchronistic. The second, what's really going on is, yes, indeed, you know, queens are nurturers. And in the suit, this is cups, this is heart nurturance or love nurturance or feeling nurturance. So I think it's a really good thing. I think he's very nurtured and it's very positive. And what needs to come out around this is now we have another feminine card. This is a major trump card, reverse, the High Priestess. These are all very powerful feminine cards, not female, feminine cards. And this is the High Priestess, but she's reversed. So I would say that there's some inner mandate or inner teaching about this work that you haven't yet gotten because it's reversed, that you need to explore, that there's some kind of inner meaning or inner reason why this interesting change is happening for you, and that's something that you need to look at. There's something important there. And that's what I would say to that one.
Are people blown away, Art, when you do a reading for them?
All the time. But the paradox is, the tarot reading is always relevant. You know, it's really always, you could say accurate, but I don't like to use that big word. However, the other side of it is, it's also so ordinary. It just happens because this is synchronicity that people say, yeah, I guess that's pretty remarkable. But on the other hand, yeah, that's right. So that's why it's so interesting, because it's effortless, and it just seems to work like that.
Let's go to Racine, Wisconsin. Hey, Tim, thanks for calling.
Hi, guys. How you doing tonight?
Good, Tim.
Hey, my birthday's 3/360. I'm looking for three O's: love, laughter, and the lottery.
Not necessarily in that order.
82 would be nice. I've been disabled, and I've had a lot of surgeries and stuff, so haven't had a lot of luck that way. But
what's he do to change his luck here, Art?
Okay. Well, it appears like, oh, my goodness. Well, we start off with the devil, okay?
Oh,
it appears like, oh, my God.
I don't want the devil.
Scared, but this is the devil just means deception, attachment, separation, difficulty, all of that. That it appears like, oh, my God, you know, the devil made me do it. Okay, it's not the Christian devil. Don't have to get weirded about it, but it is shadow. It's the shadow, but that's just the appearance. What's really going on here is, okay, now we have a more interesting card, the Six of Swords reversed, and this is crossing a deep water and kind of a transition to the other side, and it's reversed. So it's saying your luck is stalled because you're not patient enough to go through the change. There's a journey that you have in front of you. You need to cross a deep water, metaphorically, symbolically. That means make a change. And because it's reversed, it says that you haven't yet had the patience and courage to continue transitioning. And that's what that's important. And what you need to do now about it. Okay, and this is the Seven of Pentacles, which means that also is about patience. It's about waiting, incubating, planting the seeds, and waiting before harvest. That it's going to take some time, but if you plant the positive seeds, mind seeds, for these kinds of changes, in time, it will come to fruition. So that's what I would say to you there.
Art, I want to thank you for being on the program again, my friend. Always a pleasure, all right?
Great, I love the
job. Art Rosengarten, his website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Tarot and psychology, he is one of the best. Up next, we talk about major earth changes. Lori Toy, right around the corner.